The goal, there's the breakthrough, and it had to be Francesco Ciccio Caputo against his old side Empoli. Lidzicki searching for the cross, he finds Caputo. Caputo with the step over, Ciccio Caputo does what Ciccio Caputo does best, burying the ball in the opposition net. It's two for Caputo, it's two for Samp. And what a return to the Castellani for the ex-Empoli man. Here's Fabio Quagliarella. Nice switch over to Antonio Candreva. Candreva goes for goal, and what a goal! Superb from the veteran. Antonio Candreva, the number 87. Just wide of the goal. That'll do it here at the Castellani. Sampdoria come away and they go back to Liguria, to the city of Genoa, with all 3 points.
Mario Rui over the top, Insigne gets there ahead of Silvestri, and it's into the back of the net. A moment's hesitation from Silvestri, he was in no man's land. But it's all about the quality of the ball over the top from Mario Rui. Osimhen got a toe to the ball before it crossed the line. Insigne plays it short. It comes from Fabian Ruiz. Koulibaly across the face. And Rahmani has redemption. Napoli double their lead. And on the ground where he made a fairly inauspicious debut for Napoli, Amir Rahmani. Politano teases it in. All the time in the world for Fabian Ruiz, and Koulibaly thumps it into the top corner. It's becoming the perfect night for Napoli. Lozano, Petagna in the box, it breaks for Mario Rui. Lozano now, and there is the fourth goal. And it's another gorgeous strike. Once again, a late goal off the bench for Napoli. It's a resounding victory for Spalletti. Udinese nil, Napoli 4.
Bentornati tifosi napoletani to a special edition of the Far From Vesuvius. I am Rafa Rispo, and today I'm bringing you Frenemies Sampdoria. I have a very, very cool guest. His name is Vito Doria. Yes, his real last name is Doria. He'll explain it, and he'll explain his fandom for Sampdoria. But he's been working with Forza Italian football podcast for years and years. I remember when I used to listen to the podcast myself way back in the days. I used to listen to this guy talk, and he's really one of the most knowledgeable people I know about the league. He really does dive into like the history of the league too a lot in his work, in his articles, in his stories and his posts. And he's a big Sampdoria fan. Couldn't think of anyone else to have on for the Frenemy this week. Sampdoria, as you heard, coming from a 3-0 win over Empoli away, and Napoli getting the big-time 4-0 victory over Udinese at the Dacia Arena And the match is for Thursday at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And yeah, Napoli are first in the table and are looking to maintain that after Inter won their game yesterday against Fiorentina 3-1. Right now, Milan lead Venezia. So that means that Napoli, it's pretty much a must win to maintain their top of the league status. But 4 wins from 4, that's halfway to their best start ever, which was 8 wins from 8 and an unbeaten in 14 in 2015-16. So, you know, things are looking good. Napoli at the top of the table, loving life, undefeated. Hopefully we can continue that against a very tough Sampdoria team who only have 5 points as of now, but pretty convincing performances against their opponents. Like I said, that big 3-0 victory over Empoli, got their first win of the season. We talk about that, and we talk about much more with Vito. Don't miss our post-match stuff. Don't miss Ken on Twitch. Ken Cioffredi will be live about 15 minutes before the game tomorrow with a live Twitch. So look it up, Far From Vesuvius on Twitch. He's going to do basically a watch along. You know, he'll commentate on the game while it's going on. He'll talk to you guys as he's doing it. So basically a watch along. So if you could watch the game and have a Twitch, you know, in your ear with Ken, that's pretty cool. Do it. I'll try to be there myself. I'll be covering the match for, you know, Far From Vesuvius and Raf and Raf. Don't forget, tomorrow, Raf and Raf rant post-match, we are live with Patrick Kendrick, the commentator for the match tomorrow, about 15-20 minutes after the final whistle. And look out for some stuff by Henry Bell, the doctor himself, who's going to cover both the win against Udinese and the match tomorrow against Sampdoria, some post-match stuff from him as well. So we got a lot of stuff coming down the pike, so check it out. And I hope you enjoy this episode of Frenemies with Vito Doria, Sampdoria. Ciao for now. Forza Napoli sempre. Okay, tifosi. Welcome to our next edition of Frenemies. This is the Sampdoria edition. And who better to have than longtime buddy of mine, Vito Doria. Vito, welcome to Far From Vesuvius. Welcome to Frenemies. Thank you for coming on.
It's a pleasure, Raf. We've interacted quite a few times online, and I think it was only a few months ago we appeared together on the Cultural Connection podcast. So yeah, it's great to come here on Far From Vesuvius, and yeah, it'd be great to have a chat.
Yes, yes. And you're a contributor for Forza Italian Football, a podcast that I've listened to for a long time. I remember working in a hotel, sitting behind the front desk when there's no guests, late nights, putting the podcast on. Sometimes I'd have to go clean rooms, Vito, and I'd have my headphones in, listening to the podcast. So much fun. You're also doing contributions to a site called Breaking the Lines, which is curated football opinions, which is pretty cool. So tell me how work with that is going. How's the podcast? How are the lads? How's Connor? How's Zach? How's everybody doing?
Oh, look, everyone seems to be doing well. Most of my interaction with Zach is online, so I've known him for 4 years, and he's had great faith in my work, especially when it comes to Serie A related stuff. Connor, I've probably known him as a contributor for Forza Italian Football for maybe 7 or 8 years, but I've been regularly appearing with him on the podcast for at least 4 years, and 2 years ago I finally met him in person, and that was a great experience. So I would love to go to Europe again once the worst of this pandemic is over and it's safe to do so. And yeah, in regards to my writing, it's something that I do to get my name out there, but I would certainly want to do this as a source of income and something to do for the rest of my life, to be honest.
And, you know, I think that's the sentiment of everybody that does things like this. You know, we all started as a passion piece, you know, and this for sure for me right now is a passion piece. I don't make any money doing it, but when the opportunity comes, I would never say no. But, you know, we continue to do it, right, Vito, because we love it. We love talking about me, Napoli, you, Sampdoria, but the league also is in general. Something that I really, really enjoyed from you over the years is your, I want to say like drawings or sketches of you posting the best all time of teams. Like I've seen you do a Sampdoria, I've seen you do a Napoli, I've seen you do an Italy, like best of the 80s, best of the 90s. I think that's really cool. I'm sure you remember what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, it was when the pandemic first hit. So
sure.
I started doing some of them again, but on A3 drawings as opposed to the little A4s I was doing. So yeah, there'll be a few other ones of Italian and non-Italian football too. So
yeah,
it's just something to keep me distracted. Well, unfortunately, Melbourne is still in lockdown. So and I've got plenty of pencils, so I can do it.
Yeah.
It's a nice hobby. Good to go through the history because the history of football does make me curious, and especially because I wasn't alive to see most of those players, it's good to find as much as possible through literature or whatever footage is available. So the drawings are good fun.
Awesome. Awesome. So let's get into Sampdoria, Vito. Your actual last name is Doria. Correct me if I'm wrong.
That's correct.
Amazing. Amazing. Talk to us about your upbringing with Sampdoria. How did you become a Sampdoria fan? What was the story behind it? What inspired you to run with the Blue Cerchiati?
Okay. Well, this will actually either make a few people raise their eyebrows or just be completely stunned. So my father was born in Italy. He comes from a town called San Vito Sullo Ionio in the province of Catanzaro, which is in the Calabria region, southern Italy.
Right.
Now, what is common knowledge for most Italian football supporters is that a lot of them don't follow the team of their province. They follow Juventus, one of the big three. So that's the easy thing. So my dad is actually a Juve supporter, and I supported them because he did, and also because when I was growing up, I was a fan of Fabrizio Ravanelli and his shirt over the head celebrations.
I used to laugh my
head off. Yeah.
Sure.
I used to mimic that celebration too when I'd play with friends and, you know, whether it be back in school or playing indoor soccer or things like that, you know, just I love that celebration. But one morning I was watching the Serie A highlights because they used to be on Sunday mornings in Australia. And one morning we noticed there was a team called Sampdoria, and it had the Doria name in it. And my dad told me about Andrea Doria, the club. So it was formed by a merger. So for many years, I had a soft spot for Samp, but probably around 2010, 2011, that's where I jumped off the Juve bandwagon and fully committed to Samp. I thought, you know, when I look at the team, at that time, there was a bit of promise with Cassano Pazzini, but then they dropped off. But I thought there was some hope there, but I decided I'd rather stick to a team through thick and thin. Juventus are associated with the Agnelli family. I thought it was better to support a team with my name on it. And going to a few Sampdoria games in my two trips to Italy, some of the chants aren't necessarily Samp-centric. It's like they just say Doria for short. So it's like they're chanting my surname. So I thought I got a real buzz out of that, and it was just so amazing. And it's definitely something I want to experience again. So, just with Samp, I feel I can support them no matter what, or I feel like I want to be involved in some way. Whereas with Juventus, aside from Calciopoli, the Agnelli Association and all that, I was also disappointed with the underachievement with Europe. I think a club of their stature should have more than two Champions League titles. But ultimately, I think, supporting Samp, it's a great buzz, wonderful fans. Like I said, you know, through thick and thin. And I think it should be used as a source of family pride, because Doria is not a Calabrese surname. There are a few southerners that have that surname, but it's Genovese in origin, and it was a prominent noble family in the 16th century or the Middle Ages. So I think that history gets lost. So it's a good way to tie everything in. And if some Doria can somehow have another glory age like the 80s and 90s, I think that's something that I could capitalize on, and many other people who are either Blucher, Cati fans or have the Doria surname can make the most of. So, yeah, it's just a wonderful thing.
Very cool. I love the story. So, yeah, let's talk about the glory days, because unbelievably, aside from Roma and Lazio, the last team to win a Scudetto besides the top three, Juve, Inter, Milan, is Sampdoria from 1990-1991. Before that, Napoli with Maradona. So, I mean, that just goes to show you, and Roma and Lazio were only once back-to-back, and that was it. It was gone. It's either Juve, Inter, or Milan. So Sampdoria really does have something to hang its head on when it comes to that. But in that run, you know, not only were they great, and not only were they great in Serie A, but they won a few Coppa Italia, and beating Napoli in one of them in the 80, I want to say it was 88, 89 season. The season correct. We won the Coppa UEFA. We were in the final. And I just covered this in the Maradona podcast. I'm going to release this part soon. We did 88, 89 in two parts. We did the UEFA Cup win along with a tribute to Maradona's passing. And part two was the rest of that season, the Serie A and the Coppa Italia. So the Coppa Italia, we faced you in the final where you took the Coppa Italia from us. That got you to the Cup Winners' Cup, where I believe you had a hot, long run in as well. Am I correct? Then you win the Scudetto in 90-91, and then you go to the Champions League final against Barcelona in 91-92. Timeline is right. Am I correct?
Yep. So,
okay.
89, Samp lost the Cup Winners' Cup final to Barcelona 2-0, who they faced in the European Cup final 3 years later. And 89-90... Samp win the only European trophy so far by beating Belgian giants Anderlecht 2-0 after extra time of Sweden. So
that was the Cup Winners' Cup as well, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. It was 89-90, correct? Mm-hmm. That was the season Sampdoria. Okay. Yes. And I skipped over that, and I apologize, because I remember that Milan won the European Cup. Sampdoria won the Cup Winners' Cup. Napoli won the Scudetto, I believe, that season, right?
Yeah, 89-90. And Inter Juventus beat Fiorentina in the UEFA Cup. It was an all-Italian affair.
And Inter won the... No, 89-90. That was 88-89 we're talking.
Where Inter won the only league... won that league title, yeah.
Okay. There was... What I'm trying to get at is... You have... Milan, Napoli, Sampdoria, Inter, Juve, all these teams were feared by teams in Europe, basically. And the Sampdoria run with Mancini and Vialli was just, I mean, memorable for me as a, you know, I'm 38, so I was a young kid at that point. But I remember hearing about Vialli and Mancini and Vierkwood and, I want to say your keeper was Paiuca. Was he Paiuca?
Yes.
Was Paiuca
the keeper? Yes.
Right. Just an immense crew of talent on that squad. When Italy were in the final of the Euro this season, actually for the whole run of Euro, were you seeing Mancini and Vialli embracing the way they did again this summer? How proud were you? I know you're an Italia fan as well. And we're all proud of the winning the Euro, but how extra proud were you to see Mancini and Vialli back together, even knowing, you know, Vialli's fighting cancer and the struggles that he's had, to see them, you know, cry together, hug, embrace, be part of this squad. How special was that for you?
Well, it was incredible because it just showed how close they are to one another, the friendship, what they've gone through as players and now as being part of that Euro 2020 setup for Italy. It was one of those emotional moments, but I think it's a you know, another symbol of that Sampdoro side. So you have the Gemelli del Gol, them two. And then you had other players from that era like Attilio Lombardo, Fausto Salsano, the backup goalkeeper, Giuliano Nucciari. They're all part of the coaching staff for Italy. So there's that touch of that Samp golden age that was a part of that team. So when you consider no Samp players were picked, because let's face it, we're a mid-table team, to have a bit of Sampdoria in that squad was fantastic. Again, with those two, Vialli and Mancini, again, it's you know, just showed what a lasting friendship they are, the trust they have in one another, the love, the respect. It's great, but yeah, it just, for Samp fans, I think it brings back good memories that they're together. And I like to think too, you know, without going on too much of a tangent, when I look at Italy style now under Mancini, I do believe it's a lot to do with the Sarismo back when Sarri was at Napoli, that 4-3-3 formation, emphasis on possession, quick movements. But I like to think it's also a bit of the Samp mentality that they had as players. Or even if we look at the modern history of the club, Sampdoria is not really associated with Catenaccio or just that pragmatism like some other teams might be. I mean, the great Inter teams were known for Catenaccio, just that very dogged style of football. Juventus are often more or less a well-oiled machine. Milan are probably known for that flair, but it's usually the smaller sides. They don't fall into that stereotype. And I think Samp are one of those clubs, and especially Mancini and Vialli Samp, they were entertainers, not just winners. And I like to think they brought that mentality to the national team as well. As well as, of course, the evolution of the modern game and particularly how Italian football has been changing for some time, that it's not about just defence first or just sitting on a 1-0 lead, that kind of thing. I'd like to think they've brought a new mentality, and that stemmed from what happened to them as players.
Right, right. It's some great stuff. It really is. Let's talk about, before we get to how you started, let's talk about some of the transfers. Let's get into present day Sampdoria. This season, for me, the big move was Francesco Caputo, and it was right at the end of the season, at the end of the transfer market. You even got him on a free, which I think is a steal, honestly. I mean, I know he's a little older, he's a late bloomer, but tell me how happy or big that was for you to add to the strike force of Quagliarella and of, you know, we have Gabbiadini there too. How big was Caputo coming in for you?
I was surprised that Samp managed to sign him, but he's a welcome addition to the squad. And I'm glad that he managed to get that brace against Empoli, because he's looking sharp despite his age. Italy has a thing for producing these late bloomers, whether it's because they get ignored by the youth systems or the big clubs, or they just take a bit more time to mature. But Caputo's one of those guys that's done the hard yards in the lower divisions. In the last 2-3 years, he's made an impact in Serie A. And aside from last season, we had some injuries, he's shown that he has the ability to adapt to Serie A football, that he is good enough to be at that level. And what he's shown so far is that he's still in good enough shape to banging the goals, and to have someone of his quality is great. And if Quagliarella still has something in him, although he's 38 years old, despite their age, I think they're both quality finishers. So to have two quality finishers at your disposal, I think for any coach, that's a bonus and a luxury.
Mm-hmm. Touching on the transfers, out, you had quite a number of free transfers leaving. Most notably for Napoli fans, Lorenzo Tonelli left to Empoli on a free transfer. Sampdoria got rid of Caprari to Verona. Jason Murillo to Celta Vigo, all free transfers. And to me, this is crazy. Jakub Janto, who I absolutely adore, I think he's one of the most underrated midfielders I've seen in a long time. I thought, I mean, for my money, watching him play, I thought he was a decent midfielder. Could possibly be like the surefire substitution on any of the big teams, if you ask me. That's my personal opinion. I don't know how you feel about him, but to lose him to Getafe for about what, 6 million, 7 million, was a shame for me. Also, side note, Jakub Janto is the first player to ever score in the newly named Maradona Stadium. Obviously, there's a lot of players that have scored in that, you know, hallowed grounds, but under the name Stadio Diego Armando Maradona, Jakub Janto is the first player to score. He led the Sampdoria, the Napoli Sampdoria match, which was the first match played under that name, and then with goals by Lozano and Petagna, we were able to come away with a win. And, you know, being the first match under the Maradona name, I think it was fitting that Napoli win that match. But Janto is the first player to score in the newly named Maradona. So for me, for him to leave the team, the league, was really sad. I did like Janto. How did you feel about that?
For Getafe, it's an absolute steal. 6 million euros, just extremely cheap. I couldn't believe that he went for that figure. A few years ago, Samp had purchased him from Udinese for something like 14 or 15 million euros.
Right.
So to sell him that way and for that cheap, that's why I was taken by surprise, because Samp are the kind of club that want to sell at a profit. As for Janto specifically, he had a few issues adapting, but I think it was more to the formations used, especially under Marco Giampaolo. So once Claudio Ranieri got there, he fit in well into a standard 4-4-2, playing that left midfield role. Sometimes he'd play on the right. But when Ranieri was there, I saw him play his best football at club level, and it looked like he was really improving as a footballer. Then watching him play at the European Championships for the Czech Republic, he wasn't outstanding, but he was serviceable. He worked hard. He was effective. So he could do a role for them, and I thought, you know, he was quite admirable there too. Losing him, bad for Samp, but I think also the figure that he went for, that's probably the thing that leaves me stunned.
I agree. I think way too cheap. Let's go over your start. I'll go all the way back to the Coppa Italia game against Alessandria, 3-2. You came from behind on that one, actually. It was a little tough, but Quagliarella, Gabbiadini, and Thorsby, who I also really like Thorsby a lot, got the goals for you. You progressed to the next round of the Coppa Italia. That started the official matches for you. But then a loss to Milan, where I thought Sampdoria played really well. Milan, you know, the goal by Diaz early, but I think Sampdoria really did a good job to kind of hold Milan to just that goal. Then, you know, two draws. Sassuolo's a tough team. We've seen them play really tough and fall short of victory a couple times. And then the 2-2 come from behind against Inter as well, followed by the latest match yesterday, winning 3-0 against Empoli. Again, you know, yeah, the first loss kind of hurt, two draws in between and then a win, but the draws coming against teams like Sassuolo and Inter, and then the win to Empoli. You sit 11th currently on four matches played, a win, two draws and a loss, five goals for, three against, 5 points. You know, the table and the points total might not reflect your play. I'm really worried, actually. After being on the road to Leicester City, having to come back 2-2 from down 2-0 and in a hard-fought, you know, draw, then coming in today and, you know, beating Udinese 4-0 on the road, which I thought was going to be a lot tougher than it was. Udinese was coming in unbeaten also, with a draw against Juventus and two straight wins. Sampdoria, for me, is also very tough. It's at the Marassi again, third straight match on the road, back-to-back games, quick turnaround, 3 days rest. Tell me how you feel about Sampdoria going into this Napoli match And what do you expect from the squad? What do you think? You know, is there going to be more rotation? Are they going to go all out for it? How do you feel about this?
I don't think there'll be much changes taking place, because the Versa is a coach that doesn't really make a lot of changes in general. You know, I've seen it, particularly when he was at Parma, that more often than not, his team always played in a 4-3-3 formation. He would rarely deviate from that. And when he did, it would be problematic for them. The Versa is the kind of coach that likes to have more or less a simple plan, carry that out, and stick to that. As for the particular particular clash with Napoli, I don't think he'll change his philosophy. If we get pegged back, I think it's more down to the quality of the Napoli players, and also because Spalletti is a much more experienced and shrewder tactician. So we've got to be honest there. With Napoli, I do expect your team to get the 3 points, but I think if Sampdoria's forwards, Quagliarella and Caputo, they get serviced properly, that's where we might be able to cause some sort of an upset. But another thing to consider is that Kalidou Koulibaly, if he's not the best defender in the league, he's up there. So, and against Udinese, he showed he can contribute offensively as well. So trying to get past Koulibaly is a mammoth task. So if we can score against him, we should be confident of scoring against anyone else.
And who even is Koulibaly these days, Vito's goal and an assist today? I mean, I just got done with the Raff and Raff rant, so I've praised him enough for today. So I get what you're saying there. But Quagliarella tends to score these bangers off of Napoli. I mean, it wasn't long ago where you beat us 3-0, where Quagliarella had goal of like the century, if you ask me. Also, you know, Gabbiadini's no slouch. He might want a goal against his former side. You also have Torregrossa on the bench there. But Caputo's something of an enigma for me when it comes to playing against Napoli. He did not feature in Sassuolo's victory over Napoli at this time last season. It was 2-0, Napoli's first loss in the league, and he wasn't even playing. So for me, he's like an X factor if Sampdoria are going to get anything from this match. But, I mean, like you said, man, a lot of people are out there touting Napoli for Scudetto. I think it's a little too early to determine that. If you ask me, I'm trying to be a realist. I would love for Napoli to win a Scudetto. I need them to get back to the Champions League. But I think if there's a I really felt like if there was an opportunity for them to drop points, it would have been today against Udinese, where everyone else had dropped points around them, except for Inter. But still, Inter dropped points against you, which has us in the sole lead. So thank you for that. but that's the one blemish. But here is another opportunity where I see Napoli could struggle and may drop points. We've been on too high of a run. So in my opinion, I think if there were ever a game to be worried about, it's this one. Again, on the road, the crowd could be hostile. Please correct me if I'm wrong, but is there a hatred in the Sampdoria crowd for Napoli because we used to be a gemellaggio with Genoa? Is there some sort of like a one-sided rivalry there? Because I heard a lot about it. I'm not so sure. You're very more well-versed in the history of Sampdoria to know more than I am. So can you let us know what that's all about?
Look, it seems that these days, even though the gemellaggio between Genoa and Napoli is not there, I think because of what happened in the past, I think there's still a bit of disdain between Sampdoria and Napoli, and also there have been moments where there have been territorial discrimination against the Neapolitans, which is a shame. Look, I can't speak for the ultras, and of course, because I've only been there a few times myself, so I can't really speak about their views. But yeah, me personally, I don't have a hatred towards Napoli. I mean, being one of the strongest Southern Italian clubs, it's great to have that Southern representation, and at least Napolitani support the local team as opposed to the rest of the South, which is sad that, you know, nobody else has been able to prop up the province or find a way to defy the odds or punch right. above their weight. But at least with Napoli, you know, they've had their moments in Serie A. They've been known to be entertainers. And, of course, when you have a legend like Maradona at your club, that really elevates the value of the club, its history. I think that's where Napoli deserve respect. But between Samp Ultras and Napoli Ultras, I think the whole territorial discrimination and that animosity, I think that's going to remain for some time, because when it comes to Ultras movements, they seem to have long memories about
sure,
that.
Sure, sure. And it's all over the nation. It's not like it's something that's new to anyone, or, you know, it's just every fan base has that, you know, Ultras group that's going to cause trouble. And I, again, like, you know, I actually kind of like Sampdoria. I'm not a, I like almost every team in the league except for Juventus. you know, I really do. I'm one of those guys who I like to see all the other teams in Europe do well, except for Juventus. And for me, Sampdoria is one of those teams this season, especially, that I think they can get on the foot. You know, they've got great players. I'm very, very high on you guys. Ninth place last season with, I believe, 52 points. Diversa has these guys. I mean, again, like I said, playing pretty well. Where do you see them finishing? Can they finish top 10? I believe I had them in the top 10. I'm going to check again on my predictions that I had posted on Twitter, but I have them pretty high up there. I think Serie A this year is so great. I have them ninth again. I think they can do it. Where do you see them?
Before the season started, I was a bit skeptical, because when Diversa came back to Parma and replaced Fabio Liverani, he wasn't able to stop this ship from sinking. So that's where I had my concerns. And I thought that his approach would be too pragmatic for my liking, a bit cautious. So I had my doubts about him. What I've seen so far in the first four rounds is that he's a bit more proactive, and I think with the players he's got at his disposal, he's more willing to play a more attacking brand of football, more attacking style. So I think that's a good sign. I originally had the team, probably bottom half, sort of around, say, 15th, maybe even worse, because for superstitious reasons.
Oh, sure.
For superstitious reasons, there was even the chance of even Sampdoria getting a shock relegation. There's a long story with that. Any season that ends in a double digit, like 2022, 2011, 1977, Sampdoria has been relegated in those years. So,
get superstitious out of here.
Yeah. I think one of the exceptions was 1988, when the core of that golden age was coming about, and that was the year I was born too. So,
you brought them luck.
Yeah, I must have. Yeah, but that's why, you know, aside from footballing reasons, superstitions got me a bit weary. But from what I've seen so far, I think ninth place is possible again. Anything higher, I think it would just require Caputo and Quagliarella getting amongst the goals again, Aldero needing to be sharp in front of between the posts. And also if Damsgaard can really maintain his progression, because he's got a lot of potential, he's playing well for Denmark, and he was probably the best youngster at Euro 2020. Yes. So I think if he can improve on his form, I think there's a lot to like about Samp defensively, even if maybe defensively there are some weak points. But mid-table for sure. Europe's a big stretch. I think a lot of things would have to fall our way, and even if we did get to Europe, I don't think we've got the resources to really be competitive in Europe. So I'd just be glad with mid-table, and anything else is a bonus.
I gotta say, I can't believe I forgot to mention Damsgaard, because he was my favorite player on Denmark this past Euro, so much so that I picked him in my Fantacalcio, and he's done okay for me so far, but he can do better. But Damsgaard for me is, I mean, points wise in Fantacalcio. I don't mean on the pitch. I think he's a great player. But Damsgaard for me is a star in the making. I really rate him highly. And I think Damsgaard and crew. And like I said, I did my 1 through 20 after the Mercato closed. Caputo getting on that team for me took them from like 12th to 9th for me. I think they can get there. And like you said, Europe is a stretch, but why not? I mean, there's so many great teams in Serie A right now. Any of these top 10 could really sneak into European spots. I really do believe that. One last thing I want to talk to you about, and then we'll let you go, Vito. But Massimo Ferrero, he is quite the character. There was a lot of talk about him selling the club a couple seasons ago. I think those kind of talks have died down, unless you know something I don't know. I know he's very passionate about the squad, but do you feel like it's time for him to sell? Or do you think that maybe, you know, he stays on, he tries to get into Europe with this club, he gives it a real go? What are your thoughts on that?
My views on Ferrero are very mixed. Ferrero is definitely an eccentric character. I mean, the way he waves around a handkerchief or any other piece of cloth, I think it's funny. He's a passionate character, the super fan,
right? The number one
fan.
Right?
But I think there are times where he's too open about his love for Roma, being a Roman. So we're not necessarily the first team of his heart. And I think in regards to the club's ambitions, he's given false hope over his 7 years in charge. Personally, I think it'd be time for him to sell the club, that it would be best that he explores different ventures. And I think some need a president who can offer more stability, whether it's balancing the books or actually inject more capital into the club. Mm-hmm. Ferrero, I think, has courted controversy too, because in the Italian press, there have been reports about his financial situation, that he's been involved in failed businesses, he's had property seized. So it's a lot that's lying underneath the surface that not many people No. So it's those kind of things that make you a bit weary, make you concerned about the financial situation of the club. So that's what I'd prefer. I'd prefer someone who's either going to keep things stable or actually make a decent enough push to create another golden age for the club. And unfortunately, Ferrero doesn't fit into either box.
I understand how you feel there. I do. Vito, I'm going to put you on the spot. Prediction, what's the score? Thursday, 12:45 p.m. Eastern, right? What's the score?
Look, I'll probably say 3-2 to Napoli.
Okay, you're going to give yourselves two goals against Koulibaly. Okay, I like it because Caputo can score. Quagliarella will score those worldies against Napoli. He does. But I like it. Saluta la Capolista, right? We stay on top for another round, right? 15 points. Vito, you're the man. I love you for that. Thank you so much for coming on. Such short notice, too. I was doing my frenemies with Sonia Missio for Udinese, the only Udinese fan I know and speaks English. And you know how hard it was, because I was trying to get her and communication broke down a little bit. And I was panicking, like, who the hell else am I going to get to speak Udinese in English? I was like, what am I going to do? She came through, and it was when I was talking to her that I was like, oh, wow, we have Sampdoria in 3 days. I need to get on this. So for the quick response, for the last minute appearance, for the time that you've taken away from your family and what you have to do to speak to me, it's an honor, Vito. Thank you so, so much. I'd love to have you on again for the return leg here. Good luck on Thursday, Friday for you guys, right? Is it Friday morning?
Yeah, early? It'd be 2:30, 2:45 kickoff Australian time.
So. And you're going to be awake to watch that, aren't you?
Unfortunately, no, because I still have to go to work to my day job. Oh, so I'll have to watch a replay after I get home from work.
Okay, here's a question, because I'm sure it's difficult because of the time zone, right? Because actually right now we're speaking to you, it's Tuesday morning, correct?
Yeah.
Tuesday afternoon.
Yeah, it's past 12 now.
Yeah, yeah. It's you had a full night's sleep and I was working. I'm about to go to bed on a Monday night. But yeah. Last question and then you'll go. I know you have to run. Do you set the timer? Oh, also, by the way, cool that Serie A was able to get broadcast in Australia right at the last minute. They made you sweat, but they came through. You have the full package. Poor Canadians can only watch half of it, which is ridiculous in my opinion. But thank God Australia came through. They came through with the broadcast rights. Do you record these matches that you're sleeping through and wake up not looking at your phone, not looking at social media, not looking at emails, not looking at your texts from your buddies and your pals? And do you watch these without knowing the score, or do you have to wake up, find out what's going on and whether it's worth it or not, determined to watch it?
The second part, to be honest, because sometimes I feel if it's a loss and if it's one of those really dour games, and even with nil-nil draws, I just think it's not worthwhile. Just watch the highlights, that's it. But if some daughter you win, and it also, especially if it's a good scoreline, I definitely love to watch it, because not just the goals, but if the build-up play is worth watching, just the general play, that's what I enjoy watching. So a high-scoring draw, a win, especially high-scoring ones, yeah, I like to just sit down, relax, and enjoy every sequence, you know, whether it's a nice pass, some fancy tricks on the ball, audacious shots. I'm one of those people that can actually sit down and watch a game, even if I do know the result, because I'm intrigued by how the teams move and how the players just go about it.
Are they usually all overnight, or do you get to get a late night one in here and there?
Look, really, it's also dependent on daylight savings too.
Sure.
So 4:30, when games kick off at 4:30 Australian time, I just set a recorder, and 2:30 games definitely. For me, I think it's too strenuous to get up at that time or start that late. But fortunately, the last few games have started at 8:30 p.m. Australian time.
Ooh,
so
beautiful.
It's been fantastic. So the Inter game, the Empoli game, and the Juve game coming up, they've come at perfect times for me personally. Even though the Genovese, they're angry that they've got to have games during lunchtime in Italy, but for someone based in Australia, it's perfect, because I don't feel exhausted. And even after the end of the game, I'm not feeling drowsy or that willing to go to bed.
So the Napoli match is overnight then?
Yeah. Match, even if I had the day off work, it would
not have been. Yeah, it's too much. It's too much. Well, for your sake, I hope it's a 3-2 where it's really, really exciting. And I'll text you saying, dude, you got to watch this match.
Yeah, that sounds right.
All right, my friend. Well, listen, thank you again so much for coming on such short notice again. Good luck the rest of the season. I'll talk to you again when we see you at the Maradona later on this year. How's that?
Oh, it sounds awesome.
Perfect. Thank you. Vito Doria.